All right, joining me for this segment is our old friend, Dr. Tony Held, environmental engineer from UCD, who has brought along his friend, PhD candidate Jorn Dinhurner. Hey, you gave me this book. You gave me a series of these books, the legendary, the Bathroom Readers series, Uncle John's from the Bathroom Readers Institute. And
excellent book series.
They're tremendous.
You can find them in your bookstore. They're packed full of little curio shop Cliff Clavin quotes abound, and lots of interesting stories.
Well, we did some stuff on them before, but let's do some more today. And I've got in my hands the legendary Lost Bathroom Reader volume, among the many that you've handed to me.
It was actually found with the Dead Sea Scrolls at the same time, so it's quite an archaeological find.
This stuff just totally fits this program. It's full of interesting trivia, and on page 644 of this particular edition, we have a thing called Tricks of the Trade, that we should share with our listening audience, some of these tricks.
Okay.
Lawyers. Trick from a lawyer. Clarence Darrow, the legendary attorney who defended Tennessee high school teacher John Scopes during the Scopes monkey trial in 1925, was known for the following. Darrow would go into court. He would light up a cigar just as the prosecution was starting to make its argument. He wasn't interested in smoking the cigar, your volume tells us. He just wanted a diversion. He never tipped the cigar into an ashtray. Instead, he let the cigar ash grow longer and longer until the entire cigar had turned to ash and somehow had not fallen off to the ground. By the time Darrow finished the cigar, it was often the case that most people in the courtroom were watching the cigar rather than pay attention to the argument of his opposition. This is brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, that's turning law into performance art. He might have stuck a pipe cleaner through the center of it,
well,
just so that it worked out like that.
It suggests that journalists and historians alike are fairly certain that he inserted some kind of wire down the length of the cigar before he smoked it to hold the ashes into place, and he did this to distract the jury while they were supposed to be listening to the prosecution.
Excellent approach.
You law students out there, take note.
The only thing I have to say to that is repeat what Sigmund Freud once says. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Indeed. Tricks of the trade, Dr. Held, from your same volume, Reforming, that's in quotes, corporate executives. This notes that when Warren Jenson left NBC TV in the late 1990s to become chief financial officer of Delta Airlines, he pledged the airline's top priority would be improving customer service.
Not profitability for the corporation in general.
Improving customer service. It's very topical with all of the bad press that CEOs have gotten. So this man, Warren Jenson, set out to improve Delta's customer service, promptly took a flight in April of 1999. Newspapers reported that he personally bumped four first-class passengers from the Delta flight that he was on so that four friends who didn't have tickets could accompany him on the flight. According to news accounts, pilots and flight attendants on the flight vehemently objected to the preferential treatment, which violates Delta policy. But Jenson insisted, and the four passengers were stuck having to find other flights. When news of the story broke, Jenson was forced to reimburse the airline.
I think Delta, they switched their slogan at one point from "We love to fly and it shows" to "We get you there. Delta, we get you there." I mean, that's really laying it out, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you're going to give us $700. We're going to get you there, you know? And that's also reminds me of a David Letterman show where they had a flight attendant in the audience, and David Letterman was walking through the audience, and he said, you know, as a flight attendant, you don't really like the passengers, you know? And she said, you know, passengers are the enemy. And of course, David Letterman ran with this for the entire show. He's like, you know, Delta, passengers are the enemy. By the way, we're not too crazy about your luggage either.
I hope you kept your job at Delta. But then again,
seriously doubt
you
did.
I don't know, considering Warden Jensen's the new CEO, I imagine she fit right into the new corporate policy. All right, let's see. From the Department of Packaging, Labels, and Ads in Tricks of the Trade from your Bathroom Reader. At one time, ads for Stouffer's Lean Cuisine frozen entrees implied that they were low in sodium. Quote, "contains less than 1 gram of sodium," they exclaimed. Now, sodium is normally measured in milligrams, but Stouffer's switched to grams, which of course there are 1,000 milligrams in a gram, to make it sound better. According to the Federal Trade Commission, which regulates health food claims and food advertising, at the time the advertising was disseminated, in many cases, lean cuisine entrees were not low in sodium.
Now and always, less than 1 pound of sodium per serving.
Exactly. In a related story in packaging labels and ads, in the 1990s, Yoplait Yogurt sold strawberry triple-dipped frozen yogurt bars in a package covered with pictures of strawberries. The message, the dessert contained real strawberries or strawberry juice. Actually, it contained only strawberry flavoring. According to Bruce Silverglade of the Center for Science and the Public Interest, they add beet juice to give it a pink color.
So here's how you do it if you want to add artificial sugar taste to what says is otherwise a fruit drink. You take
no
grapes,
sugar added fruit
no
drink.
Sugar added or all 100% fruit or something to that effect is going to say on the back. You take these grapes and you put them through a process where you extract all the sugar flavor from the grapes. And usually you do this by having two charged plates on either side and you suck all the sugar from one side of the plate or to the other. And you end up with this basic syrup after the process.
Right.
You start off with grapes and you end up with one pile of all the grape peels and all the water, and this other process or the other pipe will end up with basically the sugary substance, which is identical to sugar. And then you put this into your fruit juice. So now you can say you didn't add sugar, but you really just added,
grape juice
to it, which essentially was processed refined sugar.
Weasels. In the future, we're going to talk about the intricacies of the Coca-Cola Company's secret formula at some point, just for the heck of it, because it's a fun topic from William Poundstone's Big Secrets book. But Coke, for 70 years, never put fructose corn syrup in it because it makes the Coke taste funny. But now if you look on a can, it says sugar and or high fructose corn syrup. Sometimes you get a can of Coke, tastes pretty good. Sometimes you get a can of Coke, tastes really bad, because that's probably the one with the high fructose corn syrup. I've even called up the company to try and clarify this. And they're like denying this is the case. Well, no, there's no way we can't help you with that. It's all made one way.
Well, I'd like not to have an enemy in Coca-Cola, because those international huge businesses kind of scare me in terms of their power. So let's not use real names on this one.
Well, they're fair game, buddy. and they're also still using coca leaves, and we're going to talk about that too, but not today. The natural flavorings using coca leaf makes it taste pretty good. It's okay with me. And there's really not cocaine. They're correct about that. You're not getting a slug of cocaine with the Coke like you used to in 1905.
I guess it's no different from drinking the mate tea that you get in Central America or South America these days.
Now, if you've been to Bolivia and enjoyed the mate de coca tea, it's quite delicious. It gives you a little bit of a lift, and it's really not like snorting a bunch of blow.
Definitely,
but it does
not
have cocaine as an active ingredient.
I do understand that Coca-Cola as well at one point wanted to expand to India, except the Indians wouldn't allow them to sell their product there unless they gave up the formula for Coca-Cola.
You're correct, sir.
And rather than doing that, they declined to have their product available to another billion human beings. So it's a secret that they must guard.
I understand. I was reading, I think very recently, in the last month or two, Coke has now renegotiated and they're going to go back into India after leaving for like giving up that fifth of humanity market for like, what, 20 years? Because they wouldn't reveal what was in the Coke.
Sources in my family tell me now that they have surrogates for Coca-Cola. And one is called Dick and the other one is called Pick. Pick means penis in Danish.
Help me out, Mr. McMillan. You've been to India. Thumbs up. What's the other one? They're dreadful. They're Coke knockoffs, but they're...
Thumbs up is the main one.
Yeah, thumbs up. Or as you sometimes see it spelled, thumps up. I've seen that one written on restaurant chalkboards. Well, here's one. Under brand names, Currys, described as a major British electronics retail company, began marketing consumer products labeled Matsui, and advertised them using the motto, Japanese technology made perfect. Actually, Matsui's components are manufactured in Taiwan, South Korea, Malaysia, Yugoslavia, and England, but not Japan. The British government fined Currys $7,000 for misleading advertising and forced it to drop the motto, but it allowed to keep the name Matsui, an invented word that was chosen because it sounded nice to them and had a mystical and foreign sound. That was a mixed blessing, though, because someone pointed out to them in the Book of Lies, because Matsui proved not only to be a real Japanese name, it was also the name of one of Japan's worst war criminals.
Drink coffee, you know, like Auschwitz. Better than Dachau by far.
God, does Bob Matsui know about this war criminal? I hadn't heard this. I'm sure our congressman bears no relation
to anyone.
All right, here's one I especially like, Tony, from your legendary Lost Bathroom Reader. The same section. We're going to finish out the section here with two more. One of them, local news, local TV news. When work began on the $1.2 billion modernization of Boston's Logan International Airport, Massachusetts Port Authority Executive Director Stephen Tocco, I guess, T-O-C-C-O, was shown on television striking the first blow, knocking down an old cinder block wall with a sledgehammer. Actually, the wall was put up 2 days before. The Port Authority built it specifically to give Tocco something that he could easily knock down. It turned out the real airport walls were made of solid concrete. You would have needed a bulldozer to knock a real wall down, which didn't seem appropriate. They wanted a dramatic visual, so they made a wall for him to knock down. You've got to like a story like that.
That's good taxpayers' dollars at work right there. Build a wall so some enfeebled person could swing a hammer at it and knock it down the next day for publicity.
Yeah. Well, you know, it reminds me of the Caltrans building sound walls for $1 million a mile so that people would have real estate next to the freeway, who had the foresight to buy homes and real estate right next to the freeway, then have their investment protected at year and I expense. Does that make sense?
You know, the freeway sort of sounds like the ocean if you kind of shut your eyes sometimes. So maybe it's a good thing, you know, crashing waves, you know, it's relaxing.
When I go in the market, I buy those little relaxation tapes that have like things like, you know, that.
And tractor trailers.
There was actually a scandal on this, that there was somebody marketing like Cape Cod beach sounds. It turned out they were recording them like in the studio, in the toilet. It turned out like the sound of the water flowing in the toilet tank sounded more appropriate than the actual Cape Cod sounds. So they were like putting these out as Cape Cod sounds, and they were manufactured in the John.
You know, it's just one of those things that sometimes things that look or sound good or more appropriate, that if you use the actual product, it sounds worse. Like if you look at any cereal commercial, it's not milk in those cereal bowls. What they use is Elmer's glue.
I didn't know that.
Because it looks so white and it doesn't make anything soggy. So if you look at those bowls of cereal, nothing's moving, nothing's percolating because it's all caulking material in there with your cornflakes.
I did not know that.
And it looks great for hours and you can turn the lights on it and make it nice and hot and nothing happens.
I didn't know. I do know that when they do any kind of delicious looking pie on an ad, it's shaving cream.
Wow.
Because regular cream will not stand up to the hot lights of the photo session. And what's another one? There was something about when they did turkeys, those delicious turkeys, you take them out and they look like the turkeys are all, you know, so plump and juicy. I think they use mineral oil. They slathered the turkey with mineral oil to give it that same toothsome look.
Well, when you talk about turkeys, I worked in a grocery store in Virginia in high school as a bagger. And one of the post-Thanksgiving Day activities were you take the 3-liter sodas and pile them up as 10 pins as if you were bowling at the end of one aisle. And people would take the unsold turkeys, which had a handle, and you just wing them as hard as you could down the aisle. And then just try to knock all the, you know, like soda cans or the soda bottles out of the way at the end. So people did turkey bowling typically after Thanksgiving.
Naturally, I'm horrified.
As a vegetarian, it doesn't seem like a very wholesome activity.
No, it certainly doesn't. I'm very ashamed of you, Dr. Held.
I didn't participate in it. I just watched.
You only watched. Yeah. All right. Well, let's round it. Let's finish off with one final one about honest, in quotes, politicians. In the run-up to the 1984 presidential elections, the Republican National Committee ran a TV ad praising President Reagan for giving cost-of-living pay increases to federal employees. The ad said, quote, "In spite of those sticks in the mud who tried to keep him from doing what we elected him to do," unquote. Of course, you imagine there's more to this story, don't you? In fact, it turned out when a reporter dug into this, it turned out that the pay increases were mandated by federal law enacted in 1975, and that Reagan himself had nonetheless attempted to block them on 3 different occasions. A Republican National Committee official replied, "Since when's the commercial supposed to be accurate?"
Reagan's quite an anachronism because he was the first organized labor leader ever elected as a president. He was part of the Actors Guild.
The Screen Actors Guild president.
Yeah, so he was the only the only union member pretty much elected president, but he seems so untypically union.
I think when we refer to Ronald Reagan as a union leader, that should be in quotation marks. All right. Well, boys, that was fun. That was fun. Thank you for walking through that with me, and come again.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jorn, next time, I want to get more of the Danish perspective on some of this stuff, because you are actually from Denmark, yes?
That is correct. I could even speak Danish for you if you would like.
Before we taped this, you actually did some foreign languages, speaking like German with a French accent. When you come on next time, I want you to work on some of those, because those are pretty much fall down funny.
Very well. I'll work on it.
All right. This is Radio Parallax. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.